Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, February 15th. I'm Dennis Hart. Welcome to another in our series of programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capitol, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it all means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Good evening, Laura. It is good to be with you again on another really, really cold winter night.
Nice to be here, Dennis.
I hope, again, you're staying warm.
Absolutely.
It was another week of hot legislative activity, if I may say that. Let's start, why don't we, with something that is going to be highly controversial, always is. An Iowa Senate committee passed a resolution that would give state voters a chance down the road to say there is no fundamental right to abortion or public funding for abortion. The Iowa House, as you know, already has advanced a similar resolution. Start out by giving us the background on this.
Yes, so this is a state constitutional amendment that is designed to overturn a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling. And in that ruling, five justices found that a 72-hour waiting period for abortion violated the Iowa Constitution, that it was violated the equal protection. And at this point, I doubt that the Iowa Supreme Court would even uphold that precedent because four of those five justices who participated are not even on the court anymore. But in any case, the Republicans in the state legislature don't want to take any chances, and they are hoping to pass this constitutional amendment that, in their words, would make the Constitution neutral on abortion. But in fact, what it would say is that negatively, that there is no right to abortion or funding to an abortion. So if Iowa voters approved that amendment to the Constitution, then the legislature could pass anything all the way up to a total ban, and the Iowa Supreme Court would not be able to say that that's unconstitutional.
So would this eventually wind up potentially at the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, it could. I mean, I don't really anticipate that because by the time this could get on a ballot in Iowa, it would be 2024. And I would guess that the U.S. Supreme Court will probably have already overturned the Roe v. Wade precedent by then, but we'll have to see. But this abortion constitutional amendment is something that the Iowa Senate had already approved in the previous legislature, but they couldn't get 51 votes for it in the Iowa House. So they had to start from scratch this year. The Republicans now have a much larger House majority, and they were able to pass this even though three of their own members didn't vote for it. And so getting it through the Senate, right now it's only through the committee stage, but it's, it's a sure thing that they have the votes to pass it in the full Senate. So then after the 2022 election, the Iowa House and Senate would have to pass the identical amendment again in both chambers to get it on the ballot for state voters to either vote yes or no in 2024.
So based upon what you know about the voting public in Iowa, how contentious is this going to be in 2024?
Well, I mean, it would be very contentious. And the last polling that I saw on it when it was being debated in the Iowa Senate, the Des Moines Register commissioned an Iowa poll, and they had a couple of questions about abortion. And the majority of the respondents were against this constitutional amendment. It was very interesting. It was a close call. It was about 48% to 46%. That said either abortion should be mostly legal or mostly illegal. But when they were asked whether an amendment should be added to the state constitution saying there's no right to an abortion, it was around 55% did not support that amendment. It only 30-some percent did. So I think that the battle in the court of public opinion would really be for the side that's pushing for the amendment, I think, would try to advance the claim that this is just neutral, that this amendment doesn't ban abortion. But of course, it would clear the path for future abortion bans. And so I think that it would be very contentious, and it would probably drive a fairly high turnout on both sides, especially since it would potentially be on the ballot in a presidential election year when turnout is high anyway.
So this has the potential to be one of those roiling issues that really gets people's hackles up in 2024, in addition to the presidential election.
Yes. And I mean, it would be something that if the Republicans had lost some seats in the 2022 elections, of course, we don't know what the new map is going to look like. But theoretically, if their majority shrank in the House or the Senate, it is possible that they might not even have the votes to pass this amendment again in 2023 or 2024. And at that point, it wouldn't even get on a ballot. But I mean, there's a lot that we don't know will happen in the future. But one thing you can say for sure is that abortion will always be a very contentious issue in the public discourse. I mean, it has been for almost 50 years, and that'll keep going.
Well, since we're talking about contentious issues on this Monday night, let's talk about bathrooms. For the first time since the idea reached the state legislature, a bill that would require transgender people in Iowa schools to use bathrooms that correspond to the sex on their birth certificates won a subcommittee vote last week in the Iowa Senate. So what's the background on this bathroom bill?
Well, the key proponent of this bill in the Iowa Senate is a guy from Sioux City area named Jim Carlin, who coincidentally just announced today that he's running for the U.S. Senate for Chuck Grassley's seat. So, I mean, you could say that maybe this was a way for him to try to elevate his profile with social conservatives and the Republican base. But in any case, this is something that a handful of legislators have been wanting to do for years. It hasn't gotten through the committee stage before. In the past, whenever bills have been introduced on this, they have died in committee. So this one, it was the subcommittee meeting. I mean, it was a long string of people speaking against the bill, one person speaking in favor of it, representing the social conservative organization that's called Family Leader. But in the end, the two Republicans supported voting it to go to the full education committee. One point that I thought was interesting that the Iowa Department of Education person raised, and they haven't taken a position for or against the bill, but they expressed a few concerns about how it would be administered. And I think that the teachers unions, the Iowa Association of School Boards, they're very against this bill. They think it would lead to lawsuits. They know it would lead to lawsuits based on what's happened in other states. And one group that was missing at the subcommittee stage was the business community. And we know that in other states like North Carolina, where they passed a bathroom bill, led to the NCAA canceling some games there. They lost some conventions. And I'll be looking to see whether the business lobby gets a little more vocal about opposing that bathroom bill. I mean, they definitely don't support it. But for now, they haven't been very, I guess, loud and proud about not supporting it. So that's something to watch. If there is anything that would probably potentially keep this bill from passing despite large Republican majorities, it would be the fear that this would hurt our business community. And so that'll be something to watch going forward.
Based upon your knowledge of the legislature, what do you think? What are the prospects at this moment for that bill? Will it sail through both houses?
I don't think it will sail through. I think that, I mean, the leadership would have to put a lot of political capital behind this. And I'm not convinced that they really want to do that, especially given that the threat of potentially losing a convention business or major conferences. I mean, we'll see. I was talking with someone who used to work on the House Democratic staff when the Democrats controlled the legislature in 2007. This was when actually the sexual orientation and gender identity protections were added to the Iowa Civil Rights Act. And he was saying that the business community was absolutely crucial in making that happen. There were a few Republican legislators who voted for that, and it was very important at that time. But his take was that the current Republicans in the legislature are a little bit less closely aligned with the business lobby groups than they used to be, than the old fashioned Republican lawmakers. So, I mean, we'll have to see. I don't think that this bill will sail through. It'll get a lot of negative publicity, and it's possible that leadership will just keep it off the floor. I mean, sometimes even if a bill is voted out of committee, they don't have to bring it up on the floor. Only the leaders decide what comes up on the floor. And this is something that it's possible could just be quietly shelved.
You mentioned in discussing this a couple of seconds ago that someone had announced they're going to run against Senator Grassley. Is it widely assumed that the senator is going to retire?
Well, I mean, I would say by many, it is widely assumed, and I've always assumed that, but his grandson, House Speaker Pat Grassley, just told Dave Price of WHO-TV that he thinks his grandfather is going to run again. I mean, I do have some Republican sources who have been telling me they think that Chuck Grassley will run again. he would be 89 years old on election day in 2022. I mean, I find it unlikely, but I mean, I certainly don't have a personal line to Chuck Grassley to know what's on his mind. So if he doesn't run for reelection, there a long line of Republicans will probably be wanting that nomination. And I thought it was interesting that Jim Carlin jumped in so quickly. I don't see him as someone who really has a path to the nomination with or without Chuck Grassley in the race.
What about Pat Grassley? Does he have a path?
Well, it's interesting. You know, many people had always assumed that that was the plan, that as soon as Pat Grassley was old enough to run for the Senate, that Chuck Grassley would retire. In fact, I thought that he might retire even in 2016 so that his grandson could run. But at this point, I mean, the Republicans I talked to don't really expect Pat Grassley to do that. I think that with the Republican majority in the Iowa House being as large as it is, he has a fairly comfortable position right now. I mean, if the Republicans had lost the House majority, that would be a different calculation. But I think that he seems to like the job he's in right now. I do think that Matt Whitaker, who is the former acting attorney general in the Trump administration, I think that he would definitely run if Chuck Grassley retires. And he might even get Donald Trump's endorsement, possibly. So I think that would make it, you know, it would hardly be a shoe-in for Pat Grassley, even if he did run. But I tend to lean toward the position that he's not interested in running, that he would prefer to stay as House Speaker.
Okay. You mentioned Donald Trump, the president, former president, and we've talked about Mr. Grassley. Both Joni Ernst and Grassley voted against convicting Donald Trump this past weekend of incitement. Just briefly, kind of off topic, mm-hmm. but still high top of mind. What were their rationales? I know Senator mm-hmm. Grassley came out with a very long rationale. Senator Ernst did not. What were their rationales?
Well, the rationales were the same, but Grassley's was more than 2,000 words long, and Senator Ernst was about one paragraph long. So the concept, it was similar to what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, that they said they don't think it's constitutional to try and convict a former official. And with Donald Trump not being the president, they just didn't feel that the Senate had jurisdiction. Chuck Grassley went into a much longer explanation of why he doesn't necessarily think that he thinks incitement of violence is really directly encouraging and in a way that you would know that the violence would ensue. So he didn't sound convinced that Donald Trump actually incited violence. Joni Ernst didn't really get into that whole question. She just said that she thought that impeachment and conviction is about removing a president from office, and he's no longer in office. So this is a dead letter. Chuck Grassley did say at some length that he didn't approve. This was a statement that he entered into the record. It wasn't a speech he delivered the way Mitch McConnell did. But he said he didn't approve of the way Donald Trump conducted himself, and he didn't want his vote to be construed as approving of that. And in fact, he said this was a little bit stronger than anything he'd said in the past. He said that he wished that Donald Trump had acknowledged that Joe Biden won the election when it became clear that Biden won the election. So that was something a little bit different.
All right, let's get back to the state legislature. You wrote on your Bleeding Heartland website this past week that what you called a rare moment of goodwill, I'm quoting you now, involving a bill in the House that acknowledged that LGBTQ Iowans do not deserve to be physically attacked just for existing. Why was this important?
Well, I was really glad to see the Iowa House return to this bill. This is a bill that would ban the so-called gay or trans panic defense. And this is something that we've seen used in a lot of states where people assault or in some cases murder a person, and then they claim that they sort of lost control because they found out that the person was gay or the person was trans. And this defense was attempted in Iowa only a few years ago. There was a very sad murder, a tragic murder of a gender fluid teen, Kidari Johnson, in Burlington. And the two men, they were eventually convicted. So it wasn't a successful defense, but they did try to claim that they didn't realize that they thought that Kidari was female and that that was why they murdered them. So even it was not successfully used, but it was used in court in Iowa. And that led to this push to say, this is not acceptable. If you commit an act of violence towards someone, you cannot use as a justification defense that you were shocked that the person was gay or trans. So it's something, it passed the House unanimously last year, shortly before the COVID-19 pandemic interrupted the legislature's work. The Senate didn't get back to it when they came back to finish up in June. And so they had to start the process over. So it's now through the House unanimously again for the second year in a row. And the hope is that the Senate Judiciary Committee and then the full Senate will take this up. And I haven't heard the governor comment specifically on this bill, but I assume that she would sign this bill. I mean, it's just basic decency and fairness. And it was encouraging to me to see the unanimous vote.
It is 15 and a half minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock on this Monday night in the Midwest, this cold Monday night. And let's remind everybody that this is Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart. Laura Bellin is with me tonight, as always, talking about what's going on at the state legislature and what may be going on. And one of the things that is certainly going to be highly controversial, I don't know if you and I ever talk about things that aren't highly controversial, but one of the things that's coming up is that Republican lawmakers are working to ban tenure at state universities. Both the House Education Committee and the Senate Education Subcommittee passed some proposals like that last week. Republicans, as you know, have complained for years about political bias at university campuses. This is a hot button education issue, Laura.
And this really shows the change in the culture within even the Republican caucuses in the Iowa House and Senate, because this is a bill that a few lawmakers have introduced in the past. It never got a committee hearing before this year. And now it's through one full committee in the House, and it's also through subcommittee in the Senate. So that is really concerning to education advocates to see this being debated. I remember when the new Republican trifecta at that time in 2017, when this bill was introduced in the Senate and it caused quite a stir. And I reached out to the House Education Committee chair at the time, and he just right away said that this is not a bill that he's interested in. So that just sort of killed it right there. But now the House Speaker, Pat Grassley, has said that this is a live issue in his caucus. It's not something he's willing to rule out. And I think that a lot of Republicans don't really understand that. I mean, tenure doesn't mean you can't be fired. Okay, it's become standard in the academic world, and it is a perk that academics have, but it doesn't mean that people can't be fired for cause. So there's a little bit of a misconception there about what tenure even is. And also, I think there's a lack of understanding that even just having this bill debated is really going to hurt state universities in recruiting people and keeping people on their faculty. And one thing that I found interesting, you know, as I always say every week, I like looking at the lobbyist declarations. And in the lobbyist declarations of this bill, you of course see all the education groups, the Board of Regents are against it, but also the big ag lobby groups are against this bill. So many of the Cattlemen's Association and the Soybean Association. And that's because they know how important those research dollars are at Iowa State University, and that the good faculty would just be leaving the state in droves and taking their research grants with them if the state of Iowa bans tenure. And so again, as with the bathroom bill, where I think that it's possible that the business community might be the ones that kill it, I think that on this tenure ban, it's possible that the big ag group lobbyists could be the ones who sort of save the day for the state universities.
This has been a hot button issue that's popped up over the last few years, as you know, among conservatives who believe that college and university campuses, not just in Iowa, but across the nation, are populated only by liberals who are brainwashing their students as if that could be possible. And this is just one of those things that they will not let go of. And it seems to be an effort complexly, if you will, to punish universities.
I think so. And Jim Carlin, the senator we spoke about before in the context of the bathroom bill, he has introduced a separate bill this year where he wants to survey all faculty and staff at all of the state universities about their political affiliation. And then he wants the Board of Regents to provide that data, not with names attached, but he wants that data aggregated and provided to the legislature by the end of this year. And clearly, I mean, it's just a path. It would have a real chilling effect, but I mean, clearly it's a path to justify cutting funding to state universities going forward. So, I mean, I've never heard of anything like this happening anywhere in the country where they survey state university employees to find out their political affiliation. So I don't expect that bill to pass. But again, it speaks to the hostility within some in the Republican caucus. And I think that the fact that this tenure bill is even advancing as far as it is just shows you that it's become in the Republican caucuses of the legislature. It's really they view higher education in the state in an adversarial way. So, I mean, there have long been disagreements between Republicans and Democrats in the legislature about the appropriate funding level and maybe some other issues related to university governance. But there was just never an attack on the state universities like some of the bills that we're seeing now. I mean, it just wasn't even debated when the Republicans had a trifecta in the 1990s.
Let's move from state universities to public schools in general. A measure to ban Iowa public schools from using what is widely known as the New York Times 1619 Project, which teaches about slavery, won approval in a House subcommittee last week. This is a controversial story that the Times put together after years of research, and now they want to ban the teaching of that particular type of curriculum. So could you go into the background on that?
Yes, I watched that subcommittee, and I have to say that I was a history and literature major in college, and I think that a basic misunderstanding underlying that whole bill is that if you're assigned reading in a class, that you automatically, that you agree with everything in it, and that your teacher tells you that everything in it is absolutely true, and that the students don't engage critically with the text. I mean, a good history teacher will present different points of view in a history class and then get the class talking about different interpretations of the event. So it's not unusual for different historians to disagree about how to interpret certain things that happened around the time of the revolution. And so that's where we are with the 1619 Project. A lot of respected historians contributed to it. Some historians have criticized it. And so the bill's sponsor, Skylar Wheeler, he said he kept repeating that this is riddled with errors and that historians say that it's wrong and that it's leftist political propaganda, you know, as if historians don't strongly disagree about things all the time. And that was another bill where I think it's not very well thought out, because it says that that funding will be taken away from K through 12 schools or state universities or community colleges that use that 1619 curriculum in whole or in part or something similar to it. So that's a little bit alarming, because what if this was something that one of the education lobbyists raised? Well, what if a student cites the 1619 Project as a supporting material for a research paper? What if it wasn't assigned reading, but it gets discussed in class in that context? Is that going to trigger a school to lose their funding? And just we've never had a bill where the Iowa legislature micromanages curriculum materials that might be assigned in the school. I mean, there are different computer science textbooks, there are different math textbooks, there are different novels that you could assign in English class, and people will hotly debate what's the best curriculum, but it's probably not an area that the legislature should be involved in. So that was a little bit of a disheartening subcommittee to watch. I don't know how much support there is in the broader Republican caucus for that. It got a lot of negative publicity. It even got some national media pickup that Iowa was one of the states considering that. So I'm hopeful that perhaps the leadership, again, it might not bring that bill forward to the full chamber. But it was quite something to watch. You know, one of the things that Skylar Wheeler said during the subcommittee that was a little bit amazing was that he said that he was complaining about the political, the leftist political propaganda. And I guess one of the essays in the 1619 Project argues that John C. Calhoun was an influence on the modern conservative movement, Calhoun, of course, being a major defender of slavery and white supremacy before the Civil War. And, you know, that's just something that that people in the states' rights community, I mean, people have looked back to John Calhoun, that it was true in the Reconstruction period and the Jim Crow period. And so, you know, that, I mean, there might be people who object to that, but I mean, to say that conservatism hasn't been influenced by John Calhoun is a little bit of an absurd position. And yet that was one of the reasons for banning the 1619 Project from being taught in any context, in any class, even at the college level. So again, just a little bit of a lack of understanding of how historians work and think.
Right. We have a few minutes left. Let's talk briefly about both houses of the state legislature passed a school funding bill last week. A state Senate's bill would allocate about $37 million in additional money to schools. The state house's version differs slightly. Talk about the education bill.
Yeah, well, the governor had proposed a 2.5% state funding increase for schools, and that's where the House Republicans landed. The Senate Republicans wanted to give a little bit less, and so they're probably going to land somewhere in the middle there. I mean, the Democrats have said that, yet again, this would be like the 10th year in a row that the school funding increase would not keep pace with inflation, and that the school advocates are saying 3.5 to 4% increase is really the bare minimum that you would need to keep up with inflation, not even considering the additional costs that COVID-19, the pandemic imposed on a lot of the school districts. So that is just going to be very controversial. I mean, I think the Republicans, it won't be too hard for them to meet in the middle on that school funding bill, but it is something that probably will lead to some staff or program cuts, because when you have continual increases in state funding that don't keep pace with inflation, something has to go, because staff salaries typically increase by a set amount under the contract. So you end up having to cut staff or cut programs. And one of the controversial aspects of the Republican bills is that there would be additional pandemic funding that would go to most school districts, but not the Des Moines Public Schools. And that is something that a lot of Democrats are really upset about. I don't think that they have the votes to stop that from happening, but you know, the Des Moines Public Schools did have to spend a lot of money, even when they weren't teaching in person. They bought a lot of, they bought laptop computers for some students or tablets. They bought hotspots for students who didn't have internet access at home. There were other costs. They were providing free lunches to a lot of people, even while schools weren't meeting in person. And so it would really be unfortunate for the district not to get at that little extra funding bump that some of the other school districts may have.
The House also passed last week 6 child care bills, remarkably on a bipartisan basis. Talk about those child care bills.
Yes, well, this is something, the first show we did, you asked me about what might there be bipartisan progress on. And this is one of the things I mentioned, that if there's one thing they can agree on, it's probably the child care. So they were tinkering around the edges of some of the bills. So increasing tax credits, increasing incentives for employers to offer childcare. One of the main things, and this is something that some Democrats and public policy analysts have been talking about for literally more than a decade, is getting rid of this cliff effect that happens where if you receive state childcare assistance, in the past, if you got a raise at work, you might just immediately lose your child care assistance and be even worse off, even with your raise. So they are going to set it up, at least in one of these bills that passed unanimously, they would set it up so that it would gradually phase out rather than automatically losing your benefit once your income is above a certain level. The bills passed with bipartisan support. Democrats they were hoping to amend the bills to make them a little more generous. They also wanted a little more oversight for some of the in-home child care providers, and that was something the Republicans voted down. But overall, most of the Democrats in the House were happy with the progress. I mean, it's something that Iowa clearly needs, more access to childcare. And I think that these bills in some form will move through the state Senate. It's again, this is something that the business community wants, as well as people, advocates for low-income Iowans. And so I think there's a good path to pass these as a package. One complaint that I heard is that the incentives for businesses to offer childcare, this is something that would primarily benefit larger employers, and that some people were saying to me that, you know, small businesses, even with these incentives, they still wouldn't be able to afford to offer childcare. So that's a problem, because so many Iowans are employed by small businesses. But this would definitely be a step toward addressing a big problem for working Iowans. And so I think that these are bills that will probably end up on the governor's desk sometime in March, I would guess.
Laura, in 15 seconds, what's on the legislative agenda for this week that you see coming up?
Well, you never know exactly what they're going to call to the floor. I do think that very soon the Iowa Senate is going to approve that abortion constitutional amendment. I think that once they hammer out a final agreement on the school funding, that is probably going, they'll probably try to get that to the governor's desk sooner rather than later. I mean, there are so many bills floating around right now that, like I said, it's hard to know what they'll pull out of committee and bring to the floor. But the first deadline for bills to get out of committee is going to happen at the end of the first week of March. And that's when things get even busier now. So
Laura, we got to go. I have to cut you off. I'm sorry. Thanks for listening tonight. We'll be back next Monday night at 7. Good night.